Hey gang, welcome back to another episode of Daily Journey Podcast. I'm Scott Pontier, lead pastor for Jamestown Harbor Church, and you can find all of our episodes of Daily Journey on our website, jamestownharborchurch.org, under the sermon section. Just look for Daily Journey and you'll see all my interviews there. You can also subscribe and whatever you're listening to this on, Apple Podcasts, whatever it might be, and you can get these in your feed. We're coming at you at a Monday, Thursday clip these days. And today I've got a conversation with Julie Postmas. And Ross and Julie, I've known from the early days of Jamestown Harbor Church. And they've got these two little kids, Zeke and Jonah, who you may recognize them. They're often hanging around at the end of church. And Jonah is a default member of our takedown crew. Ross often volunteers in that way too. But man, Jonah loves to help put stuff away. He's taking the stage apart and carrying cords and doing all that kind of stuff. So love that kid and his energy. And the whole family's just a blessing to our church. But you'll have an interesting conversation. Julie is a therapist and therapizes me totally throughout this conversation. I think we have an interesting conversation about things that are going on inside of us. So I think you'll enjoy it. I hope you enjoy it. So let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Julie Postmas. Have you made any like observations from your appointments with clients and stuff of like how people, I don't know, about what people are experiencing? Like, have you made any interesting learnings from that season?
Yeah. I would say for me, like, even like when you ask that, like my ability to reflect on things is not where it was. Like months ago, like even so when you ask that, it's like, oh yeah, I should be able to like reflect and think through that right now. But it's like, I feel like my brain is so much foggier than it was months ago because of everything that we're sorting through and dealing with. And so even when I think about that, I think there are just some universal things though that people are going through. Like there's so many levels of and layers of grief that everybody is working through. And sure. I think grief has been the biggest universal thing, and everybody kind of grieves in their own way. But like being able to name like different stages of grief and understand like, oh, like you're angry right now, like about so many different things. Like, oh, that's actually part of your grief that you're working through. Or, oh, you're kind of like making bargains. Like, well, if we can be out of quarantine by this time, and as long as this plan doesn't get canceled, and as long as my kids can still have normal school in the fall, then it will all be okay. I can handle this.
Oh, that's really helpful for me today, actually, to hear.
Yeah.
Like, I hadn't thought about the bargaining piece of the grief journey. And that is, I mean, culturally where we are all at right now, I think, like, in mass, we are like, well, if I can go to this restaurant and pick up from curbside, then that is nice too. If I can go here, if this can be open, or if I can still go on this trip, or I can still do this thing, then like, but I can see that now as like a bargaining thing. If we can just do it like this, then yeah.
And I think that's why people had such a hard, and myself included, had such a hard time at the beginning, because it seemed like those things we were bargaining for were within reach still. It was like, it was just before spring break. And so people were, okay, we can handle 2 weeks of school being closed. Yeah. As long as we can still go on our spring break trip, everything will be okay. Yeah. We can handle this. We will like push through it. It'll be great. And then when those things kept getting taken away, those things that they had bargained for weren't going to happen. I think that's when you really saw people, myself included, with like grief, just kind of like, taking a turn down into like that sadness and depression and really hard stuff.
Is the grief journey a thing that only moves linearly, or do we go back and forth? Because I'm imagining, boy, we're going to get that again when it's like, well, the fall is like not what you were bargaining for, you know?
Right. It is a mess. The grief journey is non-linear whatsoever. Different stages can hit unexpectedly at different times, and you can think that you've worked through certain things and then they come back and get you again. So yeah, they're definitely, it's like they're called stages, but they're not like a linear
they don't follow each other. They're parts, they're pieces of grief essentially then, right?
Right. Yeah. They're not like stepping stones where if I work through this, then
interestingly, probably whenever this gets us back to any semblance of normal will experience new layers of grief, I would imagine too. Because any change like requires a grieving from us. And the longer we're here like this, the more like, I don't know, our life changes again in the other direction.
Right. I totally can see that because I learned like very early on that you can grieve good things. Like you can grieve the end of good seasons.
Yeah.
Because I'm someone who creates change in my life on a regular basis. Yeah. And it would be change that I wanted. And I made those changes in my life and then would have to be like, well, why am I so like sad? And I'm really sentimental and really love look back on past memories. And so whenever time passes and I move into a new stage, I have to kind of deal with my own grief about leaving a certain stage of life behind. But I do think that's true. I think people are almost going to grieve the simplicity of the past couple months or just
we worked
so hard to create some meaning out of this position that we find ourselves in and to find the beautiful parts of it. And then as we try to kind of like assimilate that into what's next and life starts to pick up speed again, then it's a whole new layer of grieving, leaving behind some of that simplicity and that time at home, I think is going to be another part of that.
Yeah. Boy, if you are a person who, you know, has to kind of go through that grief journey as you move from stage to stage, being a mom must be very difficult because it's like all these stages, like, Cindy doesn't even like to go back and look at like picture. Like I love to like open my computer and be like, let me look at when my kids were five, you know? And she's just like, I don't even want to, I can't handle it, you know? But for you, it's like every 12 months is a stage, right?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's like especially even for Jonah right now as a 5-year old, when he can independently go play with Legos and choose to do that instead of like needing to be on, he was always a kid who needed to be on my lap near me all the time. And so it's this weird mix of celebrating that and being so excited that he's getting independent and I have some freedom to move around and do what I need to do, but also just this like deep ache of, oh my gosh, like he doesn't need me the same ways anymore. Like what is happening? But yeah, it's this weird.
I forget where I heard it. It was back when I was doing youth ministry. So it was in a class around Stephen adolescence. And they talk about this tightrope of adolescence where if you can imagine like a tightrope strung between two poles, right? Like the first pole is like early childhood. And in that season, kids are really connected to their mothers. And then as you walk this tightrope between the two poles, where the second pole is adulthood, you've got this adolescence that now for many kids starts at like 10, right? And goes till 30, I don't know. but like our job as parents is to start like putting trampolines underneath that aren't us, because like they need this sort of independence kind of thing, right? But the interesting thing was, the adolescence phase is really difficult for mothers in particular, because that sort of allegiance shifts towards dad in that season. And many mothers like have to grieve that experience in some ways. And it's hard for moms, right? So like this continual step towards independence as a mom, probably like every stage feels like, oh, there's a grief to it, I would imagine.
Right. Yeah. Even as you say that, I think about the fact that I've been so long trying to push Jonah to go spend time with Ross because he's always needed me so much.
Sure. And so you have a dad too, kid, right?
Yes. He's standing right there. You can ask him for things too. Yeah. But as like he started playing with like Legos and building things with Kinects, I constantly would say like, well, dad's way better at that. Like let dad help you with that. He's a way better builder than I am. Like I'm not really good at building these types of things. And now I'm like, oh, I've pushed him to dad so much on that, but now like,
oh, you feel it. Yeah. You feel it already, but it's like, that's normal. I mean, think about an infant. A dad does not have much to offer an infant that a mom does. Right.
Well, so. Ross is the baby person around here. So when Zeke was born, Ross did most of like the baby stuff because Jonah was so attached to me and had such a hard time adjusting to a little brother. So yeah, Ross is the baby person. I'm the toddler and up.
We'll find out who's the adolescent person when we get there, I guess.
Oh gosh. Yeah, we'll see. I like middle schoolers, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, let's jump into some questions. I'm curious to see what Julie's bringing to the table today.
Well, everything I do is always more complicated than just a simple question. And so Both of my questions start with quotes.
Amazing. I'm so happy.
That's kind of what triggers me to get thinking, like the books that I read. And so the first one is from Shauna Nyquist's book, Bittersweet. And this is it's a chapter that really hit me hard when I read it years ago. And in that she says, it's not hard to decide what you want your life to be about. What's hard is figuring out what you're willing to give up in order to do the things that you really care about. And then in that, she gives a whole chapter of things that she doesn't do. She gives a list of things that she has decided are boundaries that she has set around her life, from like really simple things to saying like, she doesn't garden, she doesn't make her bed in the morning, like just things that she's going to give herself a free pass to not worry about doing and not put the pressure that she has to do all the things. And then just more serious things she goes through in the chapter too.
Yeah.
And so her question that she asked in that chapter that really hit me hard when I read it and still is something I think about is, what are you willing to not do in order to do the things that you believe in? And so that's just kind of my question for you is, are there things and like boundaries that you've put around your life and saying like, you know what, they may be wonderful, good things, but these are things that I don't put the pressure on myself to do.
Yeah.
Because I need to leave the space to say yes to the things that are really important to me.
Yeah. Give me a couple more examples. I think I'm there, but I'd love to hear a few more.
Well, I can give a couple of like examples from my own life.
Yeah. I would love to hear that. Yeah.
So when I started thinking about
I never make my bed, but that's not a choice. I just don't.
You just don't. Well, I don't either. But some like intentional things that I've done. And one of the things I've always, from reading this chapter and growing through this over the last couple of years, is always remembering that whenever I say yes to something, it's saying no to something else. And always trying to think of like, well, the more I say yes to things, and disclaimer, I'm an Enneagram 7. So I want to say yes to everything. But then I also have a strong 8 wing. So I want to set boundaries around everything too. So I always want to say yes to everything. But one of the things that I've had to learn that I don't do and that I'm willing to not do in order to do the things I believe in is I don't try to stay in touch with every person that I've ever met or interacted with. I've worked a lot of different places. I've had a lot of different jobs. I've worked at camps. I've worked out of state. I know a lot of people, and it's easy to fall into that trap with social media and being able to stay connected to everybody. Mm-hmm. It's easy to go, I need to make sure that, and especially I feel like during this quarantine time too, it got even smaller. At the beginning it was, I need to reach out to this group and I need to set up a Zoom happy hour with this group of girls and I need to do this. And just giving myself that freedom to say, I don't need to stay in contact with every single person that I know or that I've ever met or ever interacted with. I can make that circle smaller so that I have more of me to give to the people who really matter in my life, and not that I'm just stretching myself out and giving little pieces of me to every person I've ever known or had a relationship with.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's one example for me. Let's see here. I don't say yes to everything that sounds fun because of my personality type. I want to say yes to everything that's fun.
So how do you make the decision on like what you do say yes to?
I think it's asking that question of what am I saying no to when I'm saying yes to that.
Like that's the filter for it. Like,
Yeah. So
and if saying no, this would require me to say no to this, and I don't want to do that, so I'm not going to say yes, right?
Right. So if it's saying no to family time with my kids in this short season that we have of kids being little and needing us all the time and being around us, granted, I do need to say yes to several breaks from them, and that's healthy too. And it's finding that balance because I can't always find that balance. Sometimes I'm too good at setting those boundaries and not creating balance, but I kind of filter everything through that. Okay, if I sign up for one more thing, am I then saying no to time with Ross because we've given all of our energy to our kids and I've given all my energy to other places and then I have nothing left to give to my marriage and to my husband. Sure. And so it's always just kind of filtering that lens. And so I think then it's important to kind of know what your yeses are too, so that you kind of know what those big things are in your life that you always want to say yes to.
Yeah.
So that you have that filter in place of, okay, well, when I say yes to this other thing that sounds good and it might be good and it might be wonderful, but then am I in turn saying no to one of those things that's really important to me?
Meaningful. Yeah. Okay. All right. So a couple things stick into my head when I hear you talk about that. And And one of them feels like exactly like yours, actually. But I think of it from like my ministry standpoint, like from my life as a pastor. I think I have said no to trying to pastor everybody, right? Like I am not a pastor who is trying to keep up with everybody in my church. And there's a big, big part of me that really wants to. But I have a couple of lenses into that that I think is the reason why I do that. One lens is just recognizing exactly what you said. If I try to do that, I'm just going to fail everybody. And, you know, I'm an Enneagram 3, so I hate failing anything, right? Like, I like to accomplish things. So what I've tried to do is, it's less about saying no, but more about saying intentional yes, right? So I've actually tried to say, I'm going to zero in this season on who I'm trying to lead personally. Like, you know, everybody does. Like, we've got layers of people in our lives, and I have layers of relationships in our church. And there are some people that I see like only on Sunday mornings, and there are other people that I see in different contexts. There are people who, like, this is like when I lead a discipleship huddle, I'm like, these are the six other people that I really want to engage in every single week at the expense of other people, you know? And so I have like those people, like the elders and deacons and the staff. Like, there's some of it that's like, I am a big, big believer in delegating, which is really hard for me because I like to do everything. Like, I really do. Like, I have the broken piece of my brain that feels like, well, I can do this better if I do it, right? But I've worked really, really hard to say like, well, no, I have Julie in the spot for a reason, and it's really better. My higher value is to see Julie succeed in this thing. So I'm going to try to not step into that because it's her job. It's her role. So how do I help her do it? And that's been really, really hard because, again, like, especially when you're planting the church, because starting the thing, it was only me. And then we build all these other people on, and it's like, I have to give a piece of my baby away every single time I put somebody in leadership, right?
Oh, that sounds like a really, really challenging thing to be able to do. If you can see me, I'm just kind of cringing even just thinking about having to do that. I can totally resonate with the difficulty of that too.
At the beginning of it, like the entirety of the church exists in my own head and in my own heart, right? And every single thing that gets put in place, it's like, okay, well, who's going to lead that part? Who's going to lead that part? And am I going to let them lead those parts? So I think in particular, one of the hardest pieces of that was and still is having Ben on our team, because there are a lot of roles that I can give away. I'm not going to be doing the youth ministry. Sure, Gina can go do that, right? But to really kind of split the pastoral ministry in half and to say, there's some aspects of the pastoral ministry in this church that I'm not going to do and you are. Now, there are a few people in the world I would trust more than him to do what he does, right? But still inside of me, it's like a game of double dutch. When am I going to jump in, like into the jump rope? Like, is that his? Is that mine? Where's it go? And, but in that, one of the guiding principles is to say, what would make him succeed rather than what would make me the hero in here for even like making a phone call or being in touch with that person or doing that. So I try to keep those kind of boundaries in my ministry to say, my job is to do the things only I can do. Like, it's not his job to lead our staff or to, you know, be the lead preacher at our campus or things like that. So I try to take those. I say no to all those other stuff so I can do those things that are mine really as well as I can.
Yeah, I really appreciate that way of looking at it, because I think that's a good reminder that it's important to kind of know what your gifts are and be able to really name those things so that you can live into those things and really put your all into those instead of trying to wear so many different hats that don't really fit and aren't even your responsibility to do. And I think that's kind of what it boils down to. And I think that's what it was so helpful for me when I read that chapter and that quote from her, was to be like, okay, not everything is mine to do. Like, God did not put me on this earth to accomplish everybody else's stuff, even though sometimes I totally understand what you're saying, where sometimes you fall into that trap of like, well, but it's my idea. I'm a big idea person too. Sure, I love coming up with ideas and dreaming them up and just getting excited and getting people on board with new ideas. And then I know I'm not good at the implementation of them. I know I'm not the best person at details. And that's another thing. Like, I don't do details well.
Sure,
I have to delegate out details to people. But like you said, that can be so complicated because you're like, but the idea is mine.
Yeah, if you care about intellectual copyright, right? Like, yes. Everybody needs to know that this was my idea. Then that's really, really stressful probably to try to give some of it away. I don't care about that so much. I mean, I don't know if I'm generally known as an idea person. I'm probably generally known as more of an implementer person, right? Like because I like to see a thing through and I feel like I have some gifting on that. So part of but I do have ideas. I just don't necessarily like care if they're mine or if Julie helps me make them better and we figure it out together. Like I like the together of it a lot more than owning my idea of it. So I'll say no to like my own, pride's not the right word, my own ownership, right, of an idea so that I can have the better like journey of it together with us, which makes it a little easier to give some things away. But it also means like I say no to playing the role of idea or visionary so that I can play the role of like implementer and creator. I have both, I like both, but I sit on a team of pastors with a bunch of ideators, you know, a bunch of ideas. And I often feel like I don't need to bring my idea into the room. There's plenty of them flying around, right? I can ask questions of like, well, how can we do this? Can I figure out a way to do that idea?
That's what I need around.
Yeah.
I'll float out the ideas and you can actually put them through the filter. That's how Ross and I work all the time is I walk around saying, well, what could we do? Could we do this in our house? And could we do this and whatever? And then he'll start the project and go, okay, so what specifically did you want? Like, where exactly did you want this hung up? And I'm like,
I don't even care.
just there, just on that wall somewhere.
Yeah.
So he takes my vague idea and boils it down to what could we actually do with this and what's realistic. So we work well as a team in that way. Yeah. Although he has to often bring we learned at the beginning of our marriage that every time I come up with a random idea or thought,
has to get implemented.
No. And because you'd always see his eyes getting wide when I'd be like, oh, we could do this to the house or we could go on this trip and whatever. And his eyes would get wide with trying to figure out like, could that really work? Could that not? Filtering it through, like if it was in the budget.
You know what? It's stressful for us implementers to be around you ideas people, right? And one of the things that was really empowering for me to learn, because I have this, like, again, I'll go back to my job. Like my boss, Tom, has more ideas than any person I know when it comes to ministry. And for he's been my boss for 13 years. I mean, this guy's led me forever, right? And I would like try to start working on the thing he would come up with, right? And then I'd get like stuck or frustrated or get to the end and he's like, what was that again? Like he didn't even remember, you know? And then it would like do things inside of me. But I'll have this with our marriage too, because Cindy will like, well, we could do this. And I'll get stressed because I'm like, well, this might be a roadblock to that. And I don't know if that can actually work or how do we even pull that off? And one of the things that's good for us like implementers to realize is that we're the implementer. Which means if you have the idea and we don't touch it, I don't got to worry because nobody else is going to make it happen, right?
That's a real, I should make sure Ross listens to that and hears that piece of information because that's what I've told him too. I'm like just sometimes just let me dream a little bit and I'll play out the dream and then you know what? I'll probably move on to something else before
we have a lot more power than we think in the relationship because we can decide if that dream comes true or not. If I don't like it, I might be like, I'm gonna leave that alone. And if anybody else picks it up, there's nobody else to pick it up. So
very true. Yeah. I should make sure that Ross hears and understands that part. That would be helpful to him.
So going back to your question too, the other thing that I was thinking about, just as you talk about like your marriage and relationships there too, I think Cindy and I together have come to like a lot of understanding and agreement around the no's in our family system. That we actually have a lot of space in our family calendar and we leave it there on purpose. We are not fill the calendar kinds of people because we want to be able to have space for other people, right? Like our kids really don't do organized sports, which feels like you're in a big minority when you've got two middle school boys, right? They've tried some things, like Isaac has tried some different clubs, and but because we're not like, well, we've got soccer on this night and this on that night. And, you know, I'm in the book club on the other night. And like, we try to really limit like our weeks to say, if there's two nights a week that, that people are busy, that's okay. Like Isaac was doing a parkour thing right before this, you know, quarantine happened. And so like, yeah, he would go two times a week and we drive him out to a gym and he'd learn some stuff and it's great. Right. But by and large, like we kind of set those boundaries because it leaves us space to go, you know, we've got people. I remember somebody in our huddle this year was one of the things we said to him. We continue to say to him was like, listen, we're not that busy. Right. Like we're trying to figure out the day we were going to meet. And they're like, well, we're really this. And I don't know. What do you guys think? And I'm like, listen, any night works for us. We're not busy. And that really like surprised them that a person like had that. And I'm like, if you guys need us, like just come out, come over. We're here. We're really here for you. We don't really have much going on. And so we try to keep, we find a value in that because it allows us to like respond when we can and show up in other people's lives when we need it. You know,
I really love that.
Cindy in particular had someone in her life over the last year who's been like going through some tough marriage stuff and like divorce. And you know, there are days where she's like, I just got to go over there. It's like, great. We don't have to worry about a schedule. Like go do it, you know? And so that's another like no to say yes kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah. And I really appreciate hearing that as a mom of little ones where we're kind of trying to navigate what is that going to look like for us in the future. Yeah. And we see that the common thing is just to sign kids up for everything.
All the stuff, and, right? And I'm not saying that's bad.
Oh yeah. Right? No, great, like that works for some people, but I think because of my personality type that wants to have all the experiences and make sure my kids have all the experiences, I want the time at home that's unstructured and I want them to be signed up for every single thing. And it's this constant battle of things. And so I think it's going to be important for us moving forward as our kids start having more opportunities to do things and we have more things that could fill up all of our nights on the calendar. It's going to become even more important then that we know exactly what our yeses need to be so that we know what our no's will be also and the things that we're not going to do as a family, because I have that constant inner battle of wanting both. I want both ways. And so it's going to be an important thing. So it's helpful for me to hear parents of older kids who have kind of navigated.
You don't have to sign them up for everything. It's okay. And I want my kids to like feel like it's okay to say yes to those things. We don't tell them they can't, you know, but we certainly aren't going to let them do more than one thing at a time kind of deal. And I don't know. We're also, somebody had once said, I don't remember where it was. He has like five brothers and they were all required to be in a sport for every season. Like they had three sports every year, all of them. And he says, and so he's like, I make my kids do that. And I'm like, why do you make your kids do that? He's like, well, because there's things I learned there, you know, that youth sports will teach a kid. And I'm like, absolutely. That is absolutely true. There are other ways for kids to learn those things too. You know, like you can learn teamwork from being on the robotics team, you know, which isn't a sport, you know, and might have a less, you know, like you can learn all that stuff in lots of different ways. And so we try to think a lot more instead about like, what are the values we're instilling in our kid and the skills that we can build here, you know, at home or in other situations. And at the end of the day, I mostly want the bridge to stay open between me and my kid. Like, rather than any achieving anything, you know, like, I don't care if he gets a college scholarship to, you know, for whatever he's part of. I care that when he's 19, he still picks up the phone and calls me. And he says, hey, I got to think. Can you help me think through this thing? And so, you know, we do a lot just to try to keep the bridge open. That's like the one day they're going to come back across it, right? And that's the most important thing, I think.
So. Yeah, I think so too. Just keeping that connection and keeping, that communication open. Yeah. I've heard that from many parents of older kids to kind of just seek that goal. So I think we're on the same page with that.
Well, what's your next question? And quote, you got a quote and a question.
I do. And they both come from books that I read a long time ago, but have been things that have kind of just guided and helped me think through things. So that's why I wanted to bring them up. So this one is from an older book.
That's what I like about you, Julie. You're a big thinker.
Too much. Too many thoughts going on. Yeah. After 9 a.m. No thoughts before,
not before
9 a.m. Nothing. It's just about what TV show my kids need to watch and getting through those first couple mornings or hours of the day. So this one comes from Brennan Manning from Ragamuffin Gospel. It's an older book.
Yeah.
And it it's really helpful to me when I read it a long time ago. But it says, when I get honest, I admit I am a bundle of paradoxes. I believe and I doubt, I hope and I get discouraged. I love and I hate. I feel bad about feeling good. I feel guilty about not feeling guilty. I am trusting and suspicious. I am honest and I still play games. Aristotle said I am a rational animal. I say I am an angel with an incredible capacity for beer. So that when I read that from him, I have always felt like such like a paradox where there's always been, you know, the world wants to fit us into neat categories. You know, there's all these personality tests out there from the more complicated things to the which Disney princess are you kind of thing.
I haven't taken that one yet.
Shoot. Well, you definitely should. Or, you know, the cool one on Instagram now that like goes over your head and tells you which Disney character you are. That one's funny. Even more complex and scientific for sure. But yeah, I think the world just likes to, myself included, likes to put things into these either or categories, you know, either you're outgoing or you're introverted, either you're kind of an anxious on edge person or you're a laid back person, you're artistic or you're athletic. Like, you know, you pick one when you're in high school. Yeah. Are you more of the artsy, like band and music and art, or are you one of the athletes? Mm-hmm. Or neither one. As moms, we fit a lot of the, are you a good, like stay at home mom?
Sure.
Or are you a good employee to your employer? Like, are you a good worker and a good employee? I'm sure dads have their own
pressure to pick one of those, right?
Right. Yeah. Are you a leader or a follower? Mm-hmm. Right. And then it just came to mind the age old, as soon as you grow up in the state of Michigan, are you a U of M fan or a MSU fan? And I joke about that, but really at the very beginning, we say, pick a side.
That's
like
right.
You got to know what side you're on. The kids on the elementary school playground, they know what side they're on of those things. And so, yeah, there's just so many different ways that we don't really fit into those neat categories. And I think especially during this time, we're trying to fit people into neat categories too. Like where do you fall? Where do you, how do you feel about this whole thing? Yeah. Like, are you afraid or do you think this is all ridiculous? And
suddenly
not
there are a lot of aisles that we can be on either side of, right?
Right.
And it's aisles just, everywhere.
It's just shining such a light on that. And so my question for you then is just in what ways do you see paradox in yourself, either in like feelings that don't match up within you, or ways that you don't fit neatly into a category? And it can be related to like what's going on right now or just in general. Like, are there things about you that you're like, oh yeah, I've never fully fit into an either or? Like, where am I at? And like,
sure.
Like if someone said like, you know, I'm artistic and I'm athletic, I'm outgoing and I'm introverted. Like I can be both things.
Yeah. I think your maybe adult journey is the journey of embracing those ands. Like, it's like, you kind of spoke to this as you're a kid and as you're a teenager, like you kind of you put yourself into one corner or the other, and then you spend like the next 20 years sort of undoing that and why that's like rediscovering these other parts of yourself. And so I think one and that is true of me is I'm a leader and I'm a follower. Like there are plenty of time. There are plenty of times where I feel most comfortable like leading and saying, all right, here's where we're going. We're going in this direction. Here's how we're going to get there. And then there's just a lot of times where I feel uncertain, you know, where I'm like, I don't know. I'd rather like not be in the front of this thing. And I think I experience a lot of tension around that because I can do that with the same groups of people sometimes. So people who have experienced my leadership, I might be in a social situation. I might be in a, you know, a different kind of situation. And I'm like, I'm in the back of the room. And sometimes people are like, are you okay? Like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, just don't want to lead here. Just not interested in that. And I can't explain that all the time. I don't know why that is, I guess, but I don't know. Maybe just leaders, like, you don't always want to lead. You want to let other people lead and you don't always know the answer. So I tend to be all the way in or sometimes like all the way out because it's like, I don't know how to deal with this. This is new for me. I need to process because I'm a processor. So in those moments or those seasons or those experiences, I don't want to lead. I want to follow. And I think you said that, or maybe it was in the quote, I feel guilty for being happy, right?
I feel guilty about not feeling guilty.
Right, sure, yep. So I will feel guilty about not being in that leadership role sometimes, with like, oh, people think, or withdrawing. So I would say I'm also like an introvert and an extrovert, because I get my energy when I can retreat, for sure. But man, I need to be around people. I need to have a conversation like this. I need to, you know, I need to pastor people. I need to be part of a team. I need to be all that kind of stuff. And so sometimes I'll feel guilty for not being enough of one or the other. It's kind of maddening to find the paradoxes in yourself. You're like, I lose either way somehow, right?
Right. Yeah. And I think it's so freeing to me when people say it's okay to be a paradox of different things, that you don't have to fit neatly. But you're right, it is still so maddening, even though it's okay to be that way. It's still, but I want to fit neatly. Like, I want to be able to just say, oh, here's characteristics about me, and they're all true. And I'm the person who, if I'm taking a personality test, I'm like, well, can I write like an essay answer for that question? And then you can tell me what that means. Like, when it's like, would you choose this or this? I'm like, there's an explanation that goes with that. That
is, like, you totally would do that. I get that from you for sure.
Oh, I 100% would. And so I think that's why I always hated, like, when I was in grad school and an undergrad, and you had to do all these things about testing. And I was like, well, but no, like, no, neither answer, but both. Like, let me write an essay. And I think that's why, like, another plug for Enneagram, just the complexity. That's the only thing that's ever resonated with me, because there's such complexity to it. And I don't think it really fits people into a specific box, but allows for so much variation within each personality type, and allows for like the journey of like discovering. Like, I've transitioned to different types that I thought I could be or thought I was, or different wings over time. So
I think the one place where I have felt like the most tension around that journey that you describe, around that kind of that paradox, has been in ministry. Because I mean, I've been in ministry for like, I don't know, 20 years now, doing youth ministry, Young Life, you know, in college, I was a youth pastor, you know, as a pastor, because I have always felt like, oh, I'm not the kind of pastor or youth pastor or ministry person that other people are. Like, I'm, which then leads you down the road of like, well, I'm just kind of faking it and they're buying it. And so like, maybe I could keep doing it for a little longer. But as a youth pastor, I mean, I've had very specific experiences. You know, do you know Lewis Ford?
I think we worked together a long time ago.
So he's a friend. He's a really close friend of mine. And he was on the podcast a while ago, but couldn't be a more different person than I am. Right. And we worked side by side in youth ministry. And I just would live in this world of comparison, where he was the more like effervescent, like large circles of relationship, you know, high energy kind of youth pastor. And I was the more calculating, investing in a few people, leadership development kind of leader, right? Planner, strategic leader kind of thing. And man, did I feel a lot of days in that position of like, these people don't accept me in this role because I'm more of the paradox and not the one kind of thing. And I feel that way in pastoral ministry. Like, I compare myself to like other pastors all the time. It's kind of the cursed side of the blessing in being in Harbor churches is I get to work with an amazing team of people who have lots of different gifts, and I'm around like 8 different pastors all day long and stuff. And man, am I better because of it. But it's also really, really easy to compare your leadership to theirs and say, I'm very different than that leader. I am in no way. And so then it's easy to feel like, well, I'm the different one here. How did I get here? Are people going to know that? Should I be, you know? So that's difficult. I feel like ministry presents, like, locks you in and less approaches the paradox thing with grace, because there's just an expectation on your leadership. The biggest blessing I've had is to plant a church, because like, though, I mean, when did you and Ross show up to Jamestown Harbor? Pretty early on.
Yeah. We came to the first preview service.
We had been waiting
for that one. And yep, we came there and we signed up from there.
So this is a great example. You showed up at the very first previews, like the first thing that we had done. And yet somewhere in your head, you have this realization that this thing was here before me, right? Like I am coming into something that wasn't mine. And so every single person who's ever experienced Jameson Harbor Church has probably experienced me as a leader and has said, oh, maybe there's parts of his leadership that I wish were different or that I didn't like, or that I want some different, but he was here first.
Right? No, it's been perfect. We've never, ever
right.
had a,
yeah.
no, just yeah. kidding.
but at some point, like creating a new thing has allowed me to create a system and a structure that allows for the parts of my leadership that aren't there to go to other people, you know, that it's there in the whole. And there's a lot more grace to say, this isn't, Scott, you didn't come into my thing and then lead a different way that I wanted you to. Like in some really basic ways, you came into my thing and said, is this okay enough for me to keep hanging around? It's a weird way to think about ministry, I understand, but like that's been a huge blessing to me and a gift to be a part of this church, because I feel like I can be my full self as a leader as much as like more than I've ever had in the past. And it's tough to live in that paradox in ministry in particular. So,
yeah, I can see where there's extra challenges in there, that as soon there's this box that pastors are supposed to fit into. And as soon as you start believing that that's what you need to fit into and not believing that God is way more creative than just this one box that each of us are supposed to fit into. Yeah. I feel the same way sometimes in my roles as well, like as a mom and as a therapist, that I don't always fit. Yeah. These perfect boxes of what,
and your brain other people knows look like. It's okay, right? Like my brain knows, listen, I'm not good at everything. Like live into your gifts, man. Like be the person that you are best. And if you can't be all things to all people and all that, my brain knows that, but like my heart doesn't necessarily know that, because we don't want to experience rejection. You know, we don't want to experience letting somebody down. And I do that all the time because I'm not good at everything and I'm not every kind of person. And I would imagine as like as a therapist too, like I can't help everybody the way they want to be helped. Right. You probably experienced that too.
Yes. Yep. Tumbling. And you have to learn that from the very beginning, that not everything is a good fit and you might not be able to be the best person for every person.
Yeah.
But that, again, that God is way too creative to make every person in that role the same, and that there are certain clients that I can reach that other people might not have been able to, even if they have all the skills and experience in the books. But I think it's just an understanding that God is way more creative than just putting people into very specific categories. But I do think we still fall into that trap of trying to fit ourselves into those because we want to present ourselves to people as, oh, here, like you can know all about me by me just giving you these quick little things. Here's a description of who I am. Okay. Now you know me. And I think we want to be known too. And so we want to be able to understand
the paradox inside of us to be understood by other people, right? Like we spend a lot of time figuring it out on ourselves as we become adults. Like what are those paradoxes in me? And then we also want other people we want to be known for those things and appreciated for those things. And boy, we live in a world where that is going away faster and faster.
Right.
Because well, and I think all we get is a soundbite of a person and everything is out of context. And we want to be people in context.
Right. We get their little social media feed, which is great and wonderful and allows us access to so much information we might not usually have. But yeah, I think it's helping us almost to put people into these little categories because we just see snippets and then we think that maybe we need to fit into certain categories in order to present ourselves to the world in an acceptable way. And it just kind of escalates that in certain ways.
It's one of the reasons why, like, this was a few months ago that I canceled my Facebook account, because I felt like I was recognizing inside of me, this is a tool I'm trying to use to allow myself to be known, right? To be known by other people. But I realized my tension with it was, it's allowing this little part of me to be known. And that's allowing people to think they know all of me based on that. And even without having this language, I would have said, I'm probably more paradoxical than a social media account will allow me to be known with. And I didn't like, so it was like this false knowing, right? It was this false connection. Boy, I hate a false connection. You know, I'd rather have a more meaningful, like actual engaged one. And so It's allowed me the freedom. I've said, there's another first question. I've said no to social media stuff so that I can say yes to less friends, right? Like, I don't have 1,000 Facebook friends anymore, but more like known relationships because of that. So,
right. I love that. I wish I was brave enough to do it. Maybe someday.
Oh, it's not hard. Once you do it, you'll find out it's so much, it's easy to not. Trust me. It's way easier than you think.
Oh, we'll see. Back in the day, I used to delete my Facebook account all the time, but it's been a while.
Well, here's the trick. They want you on it, right? So they will give you the option to say, oh, maybe you just want to take a break for a while. We'll hold your whole account here. So all you got to do is log back in and it'll be right there for you. And then it's on you, right? You got to keep yourself from like logging back on. There is also an option to say, nope, erase it forever, right?
Oh, so, you almost give me a heart attack with my sentimental side saying that. It's difficult for me to go, oh my goodness, I would lose all those memories.
Well, just download the pictures. You can download all the pictures. That's easy, right? But once you, so now if there's ever a moment where I'm like, oh, I don't know, do I want to get back on? I'm like, do I want to friend request 1,000 people again? Like, nah. So right. Like, it actually takes it away from you. But
well, I love that. I love that you were brave enough to just hit that button and know that you needed to say no to that in order to say yes more authentic and genuine connection with people.
What's the biggest paradox inside of you?
Let's see here. I should have had a prepared answer for that. I have a hard time choosing one of anything. So maybe that's a paradox. I can't ever choose one favorite or whatever of anything. I think you hit on one of the things that's biggest that people don't always recognize about me is just that deep need for just alone and disconnected time. When I'm, and I think you said this too, when I'm around people, I'm 100% with them. Like I am on and I am present. Well, kind of, I'm easily distracted, but I'm there. I want to fully engage with people. I want to bring my most enthusiastic, excited, high energy self. And then I'm also someone who just needs to disconnect and be alone and spend time with a book and a journal and nothingness sometimes.
Do you feel like guilty over having that side of things versus like I'm supposed to be the more engaged relational person?
Yeah, I think it took me a long time to understand that like having an introverted side is actually something valuable and beautiful because I just think, at least for me growing up, when people would put that category, like, are you outgoing or are you shy? And it was always to me like, well, outgoing, because that's the highly valued thing. People love to be around someone bright and outgoing and excited and someone who can bring the energy somewhere. And so I think I worked really hard to fit that category because I can sometimes.
You are totally capable of being that person. And I've seen that in you, and you can bring that to people when you're with them. But I think it's also like, well, you're a person. A person isn't that way all the time, right? Like it's okay to be this other. I mean, as humans, we need that internal, interior, reflective, isolated experience too, right? And it's funny that we would feel guilty to do that.
And I deeply need that. And I deeply sometimes just need to be more quiet and serious even in a group setting sometimes. Yeah. And I think that's still a paradox that I struggle with because like you said, sometimes if you're not taking that leadership role, people say, well, what's wrong? Yeah. Is something wrong? Like you're not showing up as the leader that we have kind of expected you to be because you have, and you are able to. Sure. And so people say, that's who you are.
That's like, what I expect from that person, right?
Right. Yeah. And so, and I think a lot of times it's our, like people don't mean harm with that and it's not their fault. And sometimes it's our own stuff we have to work through. But I think sometimes I don't feel that permission to show up in a space as the more serious person or the person who's having a hard day or the person who's struggling and just needs to let someone else carry that energy and that leadership of a group. And I will always take that on myself, no matter how exhausting it is.
Really, that's really helpful. I will repent of the fact that I don't expect Julie to show up that way. Cause you know, like you're giving me a side of you too, that I really appreciate right now because I can see how I put you in the other box. because I mean, you fit in that box so well and you do that, but it's like, oh yeah, there's a full person here. And I might not be like in my own head, like seeing the full Julie. So I'm going to do better at trying to like recognize that, yeah, Julie has a different side to her too. And that is just as amazing and beautiful and important as the other sides of you too. And, you know, so that's a really, I'm glad you shared that with me today.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And then again, it's not your fault if you, like, I'm quick to hide that side of me because I don't feel like that's the part that's supposed to show up. Like I said, I'm a paradox where I love to be that high energy, excited person and bring that energy to a space. And sometimes I don't feel like I need to be that way, or I want to show up differently because I'm a paradox of those different feelings. But I don't quickly give people permission to see that side of things. So it wouldn't be the fault of other people that they
would feel like that's
that
because I won't like, I feel less inclined to give permission for you to see that side of me because I'm afraid that if you'll see it, you'll reject it.
Yeah. I don't know if I've necessarily thought about it in that way before, but I would assume that it comes from some fear of that where, like I said, even growing up, you're supposed to bring, like, it was always like on those things. Are you shy or outgoing? Outgoing was always valued. Mm-hmm. And so I, or at least for me, and I taught myself that that was the valuable thing was to don't bring other people down. And I think part of, if people are familiar with Enneagram, the Enneagram 7 is the be enthusiastic, bring people up. Like don't crash anything down. Don't make people think about the sad and the hard things. Like make sure you, and so I think I sometimes take on that role too of protecting people from the sad and the hard. And feel like that's my job to make sure that everyone else kind of is protected from the hard and the sad and the deep feelings. And then that's not fair for me to do that to people either. That if I showed up with that real genuine self, sometimes that's feeling that way. It would also give other people permission to show up as their real and genuine self.
That's the trick of it, right? Like when we are showing up as our real and authentic selves, like there's something inside us that goes, oh, I see you're doing that. That means I can do that too. Right. Like that's the thing I've learned most in a job that makes you show up as a kind of person, which a pastor is that job kind of job. I have to be a kind of person. I've tried really, really hard to show up with as much of myself as I can. Even though that's harder because I think it gives permission, right? It allows each, cause at the end of the day, I want to get to know the whole of you. And I wish that was okay enough for you to feel comfortable doing that. And we may never get to a space where that's totally true in the church or in the world around us. But we certainly shouldn't rob each other of that opportunity by just being one kind of person, I guess.
Right. And I appreciate that about you. And I want to affirm that you're doing a really good job in that. And that's one thing.
Oh, good. Thank you.
It is one thing that has made us feel so connected to Jamestown Harbor and feel like it's a place where we can show up as our true selves. And it also helps when you have a kid who screams and cries sometimes as you're trying to leave church and you have to show up as your real, authentic, genuine selves, not looking perfectly put together all of the time. So our kids have definitely, you know, forced us into that sometimes. But one of the things about like the way that you have built Jamestown Harbor and like some of the values there is that we do feel like we can show up like that. We can be a mess when we show up on Sunday mornings because we've been fighting our kids to get out the door or Ross
and I
got an argument.
Well, because of course you have. You're a person and that's what people do, right?
But I think that showing up at Jamestown Harbor like that or having to walk out the door with a kid screaming under our arm and we don't feel like the people who are watching us are judging us. They're going, oh my gosh, like how did they show up like that? We just feel this genuine. We have had so many people speak into just love and encouragement and acceptance and saying, been there. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like he's five or he's three or he's whatever age. Like it's cool. He's a kid. It's cool. We don't think you're worse parents because your kid is throwing a tantrum. And
well,
so
that's
I think
I think one of our values has always been like authentic stories. Like we want you to be you and bring that to the table, but you've got to tell that, like, you've got to be willing to take the risk and like tell the authentic story about yourself. And, you know, like the truth is like your life is kind of messed up. So is mine. Like we're fooling each other to say that any single one of us has got the corner on the market of like, we got it all together. Like, no, you don't. The more I meet with people, the more conversations I have with people, the more easy it is to see like, oh, that's kind of where you're uniquely like screwed up. Oh, okay. And then I can, then we feel better about it. And the more we can do that, I think the better off we're going to be. So.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that you start with that though, and that you are willing to admit that stuff and tell stories about your own life that reflect that, because I think it just gives permission for the rest of us to also show up as our true selves. So
I'm not sure how to do it differently, honestly, at this point. Like, you know, this weekend when you and I are recording this, like we just, there's a video that's out about like just our reopening plan for church and stuff. And I could have done that myself to a camera, but I've like, one of the things I realized was, I feel like I'm presenting. And so I had Steve come on and just have a conversation with me about it. And I feel like that allows me to be more nuanced and authentic in it. And I feel like, that's better. I'd rather lead that way as much as I can, because I feel like, man, we're all like that. And presentation is difficult, you know, in person and on video and in the world we live in right now, how do we present? So, you know, thanks for being on the podcast today and not presenting yourself, but bringing your authentic self to the table. I appreciate it.
I tried my best. Like I said, it was after 9 o'clock, so I can think at this point. So yeah, I'm happy to do it. Again, paradox of me though, is that I want to sign up for everything and say yes to everything. Yeah. And then as soon as I do, I say, well, I don't really want to do that. So this is a prime example. And so thanks for your patience and waiting for me to actually have a schedule and a plan to do it.
It was a fun conversation. Thanks for having it with me.
Yeah, no problem. We'll talk to you later. Yeah.